Former Coalition Prime Minister John Howard led Australia's second longest serving government through 11 consecutive years and four election victories. His time as Prime Minister was defined by the September 11 attacks, wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and at home, major tax reform, the GST and gun control. Now he's written a book looking at how Australia is managing national and international crises since he'd left office and making the case for conservative values and the Liberal Party. The book is called A Sense of Balance, and John Howard joins me this morning. John Howard, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Thank you. Good morning.
We will get to your book in a moment, but I just want to go to those revelations surrounding the former Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Now, he secretly swore himself into five portfolios, including Treasury. We know now that former Treasurer Josh Frydenberg is livid about the decision. Is he justified to feel livid?
Well, I don't know whether he's livid. I spoke to Josh yesterday, and I think it's an exaggeration to say he's livid. He confirmed what he said publicly. And let me say at the outset that what Scott Morrison did was not legal. It was very unusual. I'm not aware of it having happened before. It certainly never happened in the time that I was Prime Minister, and I don't believe for a moment it's something I'd have done. But I think we have to, dare I say it, keep a sense of balance in our responses. And I can understand why the Labor Party is jumping up and down. It sees political advantage. I'm not sure that the public thinks Mr. Albanese should focus on this too much. I think they would like him to behave like a Prime Minister and not...
Oh, John Howard, there's no doubt that the public probably has a range of views like they always do, but of course they want...
No, they don't always. That's being a rather condescending to the public. I think the public's quite smart.
They have a range of views. There are different views in the community. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, of course they have a range of views. And all I'm saying is that, yes, it's unusual. I understand why it's been criticised, but it's not some kind of constitutional crisis. And I think these calls for, you know, sort of semi-royal commissions and so forth into what happened are a bit over the top. And I think they will be seen by the Australian public as being over the top. But I didn't agree with what Scott Morrison did. I think it was certainly unwise to have kept it secret. And cabinet government operates in a very well-known way. A minister is sworn to a portfolio. He or she exercises all the powers vested in that portfolio. If there is a disagreement between the minister and the prime minister, and that can't be resolved in one discussions, then the issue goes to cabinet. The cabinet is supreme in a parliamentary system. The cabinet can overrule the prime minister. A prime minister is no more than a first amongst equals in a cabinet system of government. That's certainly how I saw the role, and I think it was the role that the way in which Bob Menzies saw the role, and I believe it was probably the way in which Bob Hawke saw the role.
But you're a conservative. You've written a book, actually, very much making the case for conservative politics. So given that, was this a conservative act?
Well, can I correct you? I am a Liberal. I'm a member of the Liberal Party of Australia and proud of it. And I hold views which are conservative on some issues and very... classical liberal on others.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you think this is conservative?
I think it's important for somebody in my position to correct this growing and regrettable tendency to label members of the Liberal Party as either moderates or conservatives. We are first and foremost members of the Liberal Party. Now, I think what happened was unwise. Was it illegal? No. I can't see anything illegal in it. It certainly, to my knowledge, not happened before. I could be wrong about that, but I don't recall it having happened before, and it's not something that I would have seen as in any way necessary, even in the circumstances of the pandemic. If a minister gets ill, then you appoint an acting minister, or as Prime Minister, if in particular circumstances, you assume the responsibilities of his or her portfolio. and carry on until he or she recovers. Now, certainly all of those things, when they've happened in the past, have been made public. I became acting treasurer before I became treasurer because my predecessor was ill, and I was appointed acting treasurer by the Prime Minister. I wasn't sworn in as acting treasurer because I was already a minister. That's how the system operated. So this was unusual, and I wouldn't have done it, and I think Scott probably now recognises he shouldn't have done it. But does it make it illegal? No. Does it make it a constitutional crisis, as the Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister, that is trying to say now? I think that's just overblown, and he ought to stop being an opposition leader and just get back to being Prime Minister.
Josh Frydenberg showed Scott Morrison loyalty. We know that members of the Liberal Party came to him and asked him to challenge. Indeed, he rebuffed those calls. He was the Deputy Liberal Leader. In your view, did Scott Morrison reciprocate that loyalty by not telling him he was actually also Treasurer last year?
I think he should have told all of the affected ministers and told the public. Yes, I think that was, and whether that was disclosed or not, I'm not aware of the discussion that you allege occurred about the leadership of the Liberal Party. I've not been told that by Scott Morrison or indeed by any other former minister. Not that I've sought to find out, but I just haven't. You say it happened. I mean, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But I thought Josh Frydenberg was not only a very loyal deputy and treasurer, but he was an outstanding performer in that portfolio. He was.
And so you spoke to him yesterday. I'm assuming it was all about this topic, right? And
No. It wasn't all about this. I maintained contact with him. He remains a good friend of mine. I hope that he comes back to politics. He's a big loss, but he lost. That's democracy. And you can't be a member of
Parliament. It's a rather brutal business, as you know, John Howard. It can be very brutal. So what does that mean? Should someone make way for Josh Frydenberg to come back into the Parliament?
No. Look, Josh Frydenberg is now working with Goldman Sachs. It's obvious from my discussion with him that he enjoys this role, but he retains a keen interest in politics, and he obviously wants to return to politics. But I don't think we should do other than let a bit of time go by. And can I say that these calls by some people for Scott Morrison to resign from Parliament are ludicrous. Absolutely, there's no need for him to do that. And he will serve out his time, or such part of his time as he chooses, as the member for Cook. And can I say, as a member of the Liberal Party who lives in Sydney, I don't see the Liberal Party at the moment wants a by-election, a federal by-election. It would be very unhelpful. And people in the Liberal Party who are calling for that just should take a leave of their senses and just understand the practicality.
Okay, so let's go to one of them that is calling for it, former Home Affairs Minister Karen Andrews, who didn't know that Scott Morrison was also the Home Affairs Minister. She's pretty miffed. You'd be miffed too, wouldn't you?
Look, I understand very much the anger of people who were kept in the dark. I mean, it should have been made public. I'm not disputing that, but you've got to think ahead and think of the implications. Our party is now in opposition. It's in the early months of opposition, and they're difficult. And if we care about the future of our party, we will give it all the time and opportunity it can muster to regroup and become an effective opposition and, in time, an alternative government. That's how our system works. The idea that you can just willy-nilly create vacancies in seats that have traditionally been held by our party and held very strongly. Morrison's majority at the last election was very large. He's an effective local member. I don't know how long he intends to stay in Parliament. He obviously doesn't intend to stay in Parliament indefinitely, but that's a matter for him. And I think everybody should just...
Okay. How about this? Just coming up with an idea here. If Scott Morrison does move on in this cycle before the next federal election, and at some point there's a by-election, would you support Josh Frydenberg moving to Sydney getting pre-selected in that seat?
That's the musings of Patricia Karbalis. Let me make that clear.
It is. Framed as a question.
Well, I'm not going to offer any comment on it, and you should not imply anything in relation to where Josh Frydenberg might choose to re-enter Parliament into the complimentary remarks I've made about him.
Okay.
Please don't do that.
Okay, fair enough, but I had to ask the question. The book was written before all of this information came out, and you applaud Scott Morrison's leadership, saying he deserves credit for holding the Liberal Party together after the Abbott-Turnbull years, and you call his leadership during the pandemic impressive. Do you see, though, that it was a more complex story? Do you still think it was impressive, or do you see that the criticisms that people are making of him?
Well, the reason I call it impressive was the impact of his leadership on the Australian people. I mean, what really matters is how the policies of the Morrison government protected the Australian people from the worst effects of the pandemic. And by any comparison, the ratio of deaths to infection, the spread of the disease, the effectiveness of the vaccine rollout, on all of those measures put together, when you bear in mind the death rate in countries like Britain and America, with which we normally compare ourselves and feel comfortable about those comparisons, we did infinitely better. And I think one of the great things that the then Prime Minister did was to close the border, particularly from China, right at the beginning. He risked criticism, but he did that thing. Now, sure, you can debate, as we're doing, the rights and wrongs the appointment of the Prime Minister as a double-up minister in a number of portfolios, but what really matters to your listeners is the impact of the pandemic on them and their loved ones. And I think the way the federal government handled the matter was impressive. And if you look at international comparisons, it's very hard to impeach the impressive handling of the pandemic by the Prime Minister of the day.
You've devoted a chapter to Australia's relationship with China. Given the belligerence we've seen from Beijing on Taiwan, is it time for Australia to move away from the position of strategic ambiguity around one China? And do you think that if conflict were to happen, we would or should come to the aid of the US in any action?
Well, I think the first thing we should do is bring as much influence to bear as we can on both Taiwan and China to avoid any kind of military conflict. Now, the policy that is sometimes derided has fundamentally kept the peace between these two countries for many decades. And I want that to continue. I don't want a war with China over Taiwan. Not in Australia's interest, not in America's interest. When I was Prime Minister and I was dealing most of the time with the Bush administration, it was their constant policy to keep the peace between Taiwan and mainland China. And they were always encouraging the Taiwanese to tone down any belligerence, to work in a constructive manner with China. I don't like the dictatorial nature of the Chinese regime, but it's what the people of China have at the moment, and we have to respect that. And we have a great interest in good relations with China, great export market. 1.4 million Australians are of Chinese descent. Chinese is the most widely spoken foreign language in Australia. So it's not in our interest to have a barney with China, but on the other hand, it is in our interest to respect what Taiwan has achieved. She's a free democracy of 26 million people, the largest microchip producer, the semiconductor producer, rather, in the world. It's an amazing country, and I want to keep it that way.
Mm. Just final question, and I should have really followed up with this, but just you told me you spoke to Josh Frydenberg. Before I let you go, did you also speak to Scott Morrison?
No, I didn't. I won't go into any more of my conversations yesterday, but I talk to Josh from time to time, and I've spoken to Scott Morrison several times in the last few weeks.
When's the last time you spoke to him?
Oh, I forget now. I had lunch with him a couple of weeks ago and got reported in the newspaper, but that's of no consequence.
What did you talk about?
We talked about politics, Patricia. Would you believe?
Oh, no, I'm shocked. I'm shocked, John Howard.
Yeah, I'm sure you're shocked, yes. Almost perverse of us to have done so.
if I was only a fly on the wall in that restaurant. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Former Prime Minister John Howard, whose new book, A Sense of Balance, is released today, and you're listening to ABC RN Breakfast.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.